Welcome to today's Janie B. Journal Club webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Associate Executive Director of SNEB and glad to have you with us today. Just a little bit of housekeeping as we get started. If you look in the GoToWebinar tool panel, there should be a handout. Our presenter has made the slides available today, so you can follow along during the presentation. We will take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the question block and we will moderate those to our presenter. When I close out the session, there'll be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback to this session as well as any suggestions for future journal clubs. And just a reminder, I'll get an email out by the end of the day, Wednesday of this week, with the link to the recording that we're making, the slides, a handout, as well as the CEU certificate. And if you signed on a little early, you'll realize that we are going to share a video during the presentation today. And if for some reason you are unable to see the video, I'll make sure that we include a link to, there's a YouTube version available, and we'll make sure that we include that link. If for some reason it doesn't come across your computer well, that you'll be able to see that. Our moderator today is Virginia Quick. She is Assistant Research Professor at Rutgers University.
Hi, thank you, Rachel. We're very excited today to have Amber Romy Fiedler. She actually earned her PhD and MPH at the University of Connecticut. She is currently at Yale University, the School of Public Health, where she is an associate research scientist. Her work focuses on understanding the interplay between maternal prenatal dietary intake, social determinants of health and pregnancy, as well as birth outcomes, and identifying key intervention points within low-income maternal populations, especially pregnant Latinas. And so we're excited to have her talk today about some of her research and share that with all of us. And it's on the barriers and facilitators to improve fruit and vegetable intake among WIC-eligible pregnant Latinas, an application of the Health Action Process Approach Framework.
Thank you so much, Rachel and Ginger, and all of you for having me here today to present on this work that we've done, and particularly this paper. And before I begin, I would just like to take this moment to acknowledge the co-authors of this paper and the NIH funding that was received to allow us to conduct this work. This resulting paper illustrates the strong academic, community, hospital, and NIH partnership that was put into place for the project to be implemented successfully. So the outline of my presentation is going to be an introduction, the study objectives, methods, results, and the conclusions. Now, in 2000, the World Health Organization included low fruit and vegetable intake as a risk factor for global disease burden. Since then, estimates indicate that suboptimal fruit and veggie intake accounts for 1.8% of total global burden of disease. Diets low in fruit contribute to 4.9 million deaths worldwide and 4.2% of global disability-adjusted life years. And similarly, almost 1.8 million deaths are attributed to diets low in vegetables. Within the United States, only about 10% of the population consume the recommended daily amounts of fruits, and only 15% consume the recommended daily amounts of vegetables. Fruit and veggie consumption trends have changed little since 2001. As you can see here, fruit with vegetable consumption declined significantly since 2001. And then fruit intake has remained low since 2001. Now, although fruit and vegetable consumption trends in the U.S. are low overall, there are findings that suggest that there are racial and ethnic disparities in fruit and vegetable daily intake. And minority groups, especially Latinas, are less likely to consume the recommended daily servings of fruits and veggies compared to non-Latino whites. Now, pregnancy reflects a very unique time when maternal dietary intake has implications for both the mother and the developing fetus. Suboptimal prenatal dietary intake increases a woman's risk for developing adverse pregnancy outcomes, including gestational diabetes and gestational hypertension, and it can also potentially induce long-term maternal metabolic changes, such as reducing insulin sensitivity and decreasing beta cell function. Fetal exposure in utero to suboptimal dietary intake during pregnancy may result in systemic changes to the fetus that affect fetal growth, increase the risk of poor birth and infant outcomes, and ultimately alter physiological mechanisms like blood pressure regulation later in life. Looking specifically at fruit and vegetable intake during pregnancy, observational studies have demonstrated that higher maternal prenatal fruit and veggie intake is associated with decreased risk of preeclampsia, upper respiratory infections, gestational diabetes, and excessive gestational weight gain. Higher prenatal fruit and veggie intake is protective against the risk for delivering small for gestational age babies and increases birth weight. Pregnant Latinas exhibit dietary intake patterns that are low in fruits and veggies and higher in fats, sodium, and sugar. Additionally, some Latina subgroups, such as Puerto Rican Latinas, experience poorer birth outcomes of low birth weight and preterm births compared with non-Latina whites. This indicates a strong need to address nutrition-related factors, including dietary intake during pregnancy. Now, pregnancy can be a powerful teaching moment when women may be more committed to adopting healthier behaviors, such as consuming more fruits and veggies, to minimize health risks to themselves and their unborn babies. Prenatal behavior change interventions, specifically related to fruit and vegetables, need to overcome barriers for low-income Latinas that influence healthy eating behaviors, including fruit and vegetable consumption. These barriers include limited access to fruits and vegetables, higher cost of fruits and vegetables, poor quality of fruits and vegetables, lack of transportation to stores, low perceived self-efficacy, and low social support. Surmounting the barriers and effectively changing the behavior to increase fruit and vegetable intake during pregnancy requires bridging the gap between the intention to change, which is wanting to increase fruit and veggie intake, and the action of changing behavior, which is improving fruit and veggie intake. Now, this shows the health action process approach, which is also known as HAPA. This is a health behavior social change framework that includes mediator variables, which help to describe the gap between intentions and actual behavior. The HAPA framework itself was developed by Dr. Ralph Schwartzer, and he produced the video that we are hopefully going to see in just a minute, explaining the HAPA framework. And this will give everyone a good background as to the HAPA model itself.
Welcome to the Health Action Process Approach. This brief slideshow informs about some essential concepts and mechanisms in health behavior change. The Health Action Process Approach is a health behavior change framework with an open architecture, allowing for the inclusion of additional constructs and relationships that are in line with the key principles to be explained later. HAPA is supposed to predict changes in health behaviors such as quitting smoking, seatbelt use, condom use, improving physical activity, hygiene, and dietary behaviors. I will first show the entire model briefly before explaining it step by step. The 10 variables in this path diagram are arranged from left to right, reflecting the course of deliberation and action that an individual needs to refrain from his behaviors and to adopt and maintain health behaviors. This is also called a continuum model or sequential mediator model. The two colors reflect the notion of stages of change, to be explained in a moment. We go step by step through the assumptions and principles that constitute the model. Many people lead a health-compromising life. To overcome the situation and to become motivated for change, they need to form a behavioral intention, which in some cases can be a long-lasting process. A possible first step may be a personal risk feedback in a teachable moment, for example, in the context of patient education. But this is not sufficient as we will see in a moment. Let us assume that an intention has been developed. There is no guarantee that action will be taken. There are roadblocks on the way from an intention to the eventual performance of the intended health-enhancing behaviors. Thus, this slide reflects an overly optimistic picture. Life is more complicated. First, risk awareness is not sufficient to make people motivated. One needs more psychological constructs that operate in concert to form a behavioral intention. The combination of these three predictors have been found useful in many instances: perceived self-efficacy, outcome expectancies, and risk perception. And in many studies, the latter becomes negligible if the first two exert a strong influence. However, when predicting behavior change, an intention does not explain very much. This has been called the intention-behavior gap. There's a long way from building an intention to taking action. People enter a different psychological state after they have decided to change their behavior. This switch of mindsets is reflected by the terms motivation and volition. While forming an intention, people are in the motivation phase. Afterwards, they move through the volition phase. We need self-regulatory constructs that assist with the translation of intentions into actions. Some volitional constructs have been found useful when it comes to predict health behavior change, namely coping self-efficacy, planning, and action control. By including volitional constructs, one accounts for more behavioral variance. However, the main focus of the Harper framework is not to account for more behavioral variance by adding more and more predictors. Rather, its main focus lies in understanding the mechanisms of health behavior change. Action control, for example by self-monitoring one's performance, is a powerful strategy to maintain the desired health behavior. This can be supported by technical devices or electronic reminders. We turn to the five principles. The first principle says that it is useful to divide the health behavior change process into two phases. First comes the motivation phase, where people develop their intentions. Afterwards, they enter the volition phase. But sometimes it might not be sufficient to distinguish only between motivation and volition. In the volition phase, there are two groups of individuals. There are inactive as well as active persons, those who have not yet translated their intentions into action. We call them intenders, and those who already act upon their intentions. We call them actors. In addition to understanding health behavior change as a continuous process, it has also been found useful for interventions to create three groups of people with different mindsets depending on their stage of change. Harper has two layers, a continuum layer and a stage layer. Depending on the research aims, one can focus on the one or the other. Principle three, planning is a key strategy to translate one's intention into action. Technically, planning serves as a mediator between intentions and behavior. There are two kinds of planning. Action planning pertains to the when, where, and how of intended action. In contrast, coping planning includes the anticipation of barriers and the mental simulation of alternative actions that help to attain one's goals in spite of the impediments. Principle 5, perceived self-efficacy is required throughout the entire process. However, it differs from phase to phase. This is because there are different challenges as people progress from one stage to the next one. Goal setting, planning, initiative, action, and maintenance pose challenges that are not of the same nature. Therefore, it is useful to distinguish between action self-efficacy, coping self-efficacy, and recovery self-efficacy. Some authors prefer the terms pre-action or task self-efficacy instead of action self-efficacy. and maintenance or volitional self-efficacy, which is a combination of coping and recovery self-efficacy. To sum up, HAPA is designed as a sequence of two continuous self-regulatory processes. A goal-setting phase, this is called motivation, and a goal-pursuit phase, this is called volition. The second phase can be further subdivided into a pre-action phase that includes the intenders and an action phase that includes the actors. One can superimpose these three phases on the mediator model as a second layer and regard them as a moderator. This two-layer architecture allows to switch between the continuum model and the stage model depending on the given research aim. The stage layer is useful when designing stage-matched interventions. For non-intenders, one needs risk and resource communication. For intenders, planning treatments are helpful to support people who lack the necessary skills to translate their intentions into behavior. And for the actors, one needs to stabilize their newly adopted health behaviors by relapse prevention strategies. This was the HAPA in a nutshell. For more information, go to the HAPA website.
Okay, so glad that you had that background for the HAPA model so that it would be helpful to, so that we could now go to the study objectives and to help understand the objectives of this study, which were to utilize the HAPA model to develop a conceptually sound behavioral model to serve as a foundation for culturally appropriate interventions to improve prenatal fruit and veggie intake among WIC-eligible Latinas. The data for this study were analyzed from 45 in-depth interviews that were collected as part of a larger feasibility study that was conducted in Hartford, Connecticut. Now, the primary goal of this larger feasibility study was to collect data to inform the design of an intervention to increase fruit and veggie intake among WIC-eligible pregnant Latinas. This larger study consisted of three phases. The first phase consisted of focus groups. The second phase were maternal interviews, and the third phase were taste testings. The in-depth interviews were collected during phase two. Women who were enrolled in phase two of the study completed a baseline maternal prenatal survey, and then they were invited to participate in a follow-up prenatal assessment, which included the in-depth interview. Recruitment for phase two, which I'll briefly describe here, took place over a full year between August 2013 and August 2014. Women were recruited from a local city hospital in Hartford, Connecticut, which is Hartford Hospital. Hartford Hospital's Women's Ambulatory Health Services Clinic is located in a predominantly Latina neighborhood. 90% of the pregnant women that are served by the clinic are enrolled in WIC and are covered by state health insurance. The women that are served are predominantly Latina, with approximately 50% speaking only Spanish, while 30% are bilingual. Electronic medical records were first screened for the inclusion criteria that's shown here. Eligible women were approached during their clinic visit or centering pregnancy sessions, which are group prenatal care sessions, by a trained bilingual bicultural interviewer who explained the study in a private confidential setting. Those that agreed to participate in the maternal baseline survey were scheduled to complete a single 24-hour recall and a quantitative survey in their language of choice, English or Spanish, and that could take place in the privacy of their home or the Hispanic Health Council, which is a local nonprofit community agency that we partnered with. 74 women completed this baseline survey, and all were invited to participate in a follow-up consisting of a second 24-hour recall and an in-depth interview, and 45 women completed the in-depth interviews. Now, to our knowledge, HAPA constructs have not been assessed qualitatively before. Thus, the in-depth interview guide underwent extensive development and testing to ensure it reflected the HAPA constructs well. The initial in-depth interview guide was designed to assess the 8 HAPA constructs that you had that were described by Dr. Schweitzer of intentions, task self-efficacy, maintenance self-efficacy, recovery self-efficacy, risk perception, outcome expectancies, action planning, and coping planning. Based on feedback from a behavior change researcher with expertise in the HAPA model, revisions were made to the guide that resulted in combining the 3 types of self-efficacy to reduce the sounding of repetition, the repetitious sound of the 3 questions. 2 questions were added to assess action planning. 2 questions were added to assess coping planning instead of just having one for each. And then we had 2 questions to assess risk perception to identify both the barriers as well as the perceived threat of not eating fruits and vegetables. The in-depth interview guide underwent 2 rounds of pretesting, first with a focus group of 5 Latinas who provide services to low-income pregnant Latinas at the Hispanic Health Council, and then with 4 other Latina staff with the same within the Hispanic Health Council as well. Now, the pretesting resulted in finding that motivation and social support are important related factors to prenatal fruit and veggie intake within the target population. Therefore, we added 2 of these questions to the in-depth interview to assess these 2 constructs. A total of 11 questions were included in the final in-depth interview guide. The guide reflected 6 HAPA constructs representing intentions, self-efficacy, risk perception, outcome expectancies, action planning, and coping planning, as well as questions assessing motivation and social support. I'm so sorry. There we go. Following data collection, a highly iterative coding and consensus methodology was used to analyze the data and come up with the final conceptual model. The first 10 transcripts were read and coded by 2 of the authors, myself and Dr. Perez Escamilla, to standardize the coding of salient domains, which are also the constructs, themes, sub-themes that emerged from the group as a whole, and the coding structure that was used can be seen in this figure, just to give you an idea of how this coding was done. We met and reached consensus on the domains, themes, and sub-themes that emerged from the first 10 transcripts. After the initial coding was completed, the remaining transcripts were independently read and coded. And then during that time, we had 6 face-to-face meetings to standardize and finalize the coding of the domains, themes, and sub-themes against each other for the remaining transcripts. There was agreement between us for the majority of these domains, themes, and sub-themes, but a consensus process was used to reach convergence when there was not agreement. The code manual was finalized when saturation was achieved and consensus on all the domains, themes, and sub-themes between us was reached. We considered saturation reached when there were no new domains, themes, or sub-themes that emerged from the transcripts, and that happened when approximately half of the interviews had been coded. We then independently identified the quotes that best illustrated each theme and sub-theme, and a final meeting was held to agree on the quotes and the final behavior change model that represented the findings. The sample of women that completed the in-depth interviews were on average 24 and a half years old and at 19 weeks gestation at recruitment. These women had lived in the US for an average of 14 and a half years, and over 46% of our population were Puerto Rican descent. 67% of them were bilingual. 38% of our population had been born in the U.S., almost 22% worked, and over half had at least high school education. Almost 60% lived with a partner, and for 24% of them, this was their first baby. Almost 78% were enrolled in WIC, even though all of the women did have to be WIC eligible. Only 78% were enrolled in WIC, while only 69% were enrolled in SNAP. 10 domains emerged as direct or indirect factors that were found to influence prenatal fruit and veggie intake. We found social support, family structure, fruit and veggie access, fruit and veggie preferences, fruit and veggie knowledge, fruit and veggie health outcomes expectations, self-efficacy, intentions, fruit and veggie action and coping planning strategies, and maternal health status. Social support was defined as the presence or absence of persons or systems that provided assistance. Support was identified as the primary factor influencing fruit and veggie intake during pregnancy, and it came from three general sources: family and friends, providers, and food assistance programs. Social support was provided primarily by family and friends. And these were identified as partners, mothers and fathers, grandmothers, in-laws, sisters, brothers, aunts, uncles, children, and friends. Family and friends were critical to introducing various fruits and vegetables in the adoption and reinforcement of fruits and vegetables, and in the maintenance of fruits and vegetable intake prenatally. Family and friends were the primary providers of instrumental support, which means it's such as giving money or fruits and veggies to them. And this is illustrated by this quote from a participant describing how her husband would buy her fruits, cut them up for her, and bring them to her. Family and friends also provided informational support, such as educating about the benefits of consuming fruits and vegetables during pregnancy. In this quote, a participant's husband would tell her to eat a specific fruit because of the health benefits for her and the baby. And finally, family and friends provided emotional support and psychological support, as illustrated by this quote of a participant who is now constantly thinking of the need to eat fruits and vegetables because of the encouragement that she receives from her family and her friends. Health providers were a source of informational support. In this quote, a participant describes how a provider informed her about reducing her intake of refined rice and pastas and switching to smaller portions of brown rice and wheat pastas so that it would help her to become healthier. Food assistance programs provided both informational and instrumental support. Information support was provided primarily by the WIC program nutritionists, who provided nutrition education materials as well as delivered nutrition education. Both WIC and SNAP were sources of instrumental support. As illustrated in this quote, WIC vouchers ensured that WIC recipients purchased fruits and vegetables. And I'll read this because it's a little bit long. The programs that support me is WIC and my food stamps, especially the WIC because it has fruits and vegetables on the check. I still buy fruits and vegetables with food stamps, but it's like with food stamps, I could buy something else if I wanted. Like the WIC helps me stay on track more because I don't want to waste a check. I don't want to waste the fruits and vegetables, so I want to take advantage of it. So I just get it and stuff, but I get fruits with my food stamps and stuff too. Family structure directly influenced the type of familial support that women received. Lack of family or feeling lonely or discouraged discouraged women from cooking and eating healthy, thus affecting fruit and vegetable intake. Without family support, children influenced maternal eating patterns. Women would place children's food wants and needs above their own dietary needs. As a result, they would reduce their own quality and or the quantity of the food to satisfy their children's dietary preferences. In this quote, the participant describes her children as picky eaters. And so she makes them the food that she likes, that they like, and she won't eat herself. Now, prenatal fruit and vegetable access was affected by the physical environment, the material environment, and seasonality. The physical environment was comprised of the built environment, transportation, and work environment. The physical environment posed challenges to accessing fruits and vegetables. This is a picture of Hartford, and this is a fairly common what you see in Hartford. And Hartford lacks local, easily accessible supermarkets and is considered a food desert by the USDA. While local convenience stores within walking distance don't offer a variety of fresh fruits and vegetables, women have difficult time accessing fruits and vegetables. Thus, transportation is critical for women when accessing fresh fruits and vegetables within Hartford. This quote illustrates how women express the frustration with local transportation, because many feel that there is no transportation because it's not as efficient, and instead they rely on family and friends for rides to local supermarkets. Economic access was identified as a barrier influencing women's perception of fruit and vegetable accessibility. Women felt fruits and vegetables were expensive, which determined the type and quantity of fruits and veggies purchased. In this statement, woman describes how she isn't able to purchase blueberries and blackberries, even though they're healthy, because of the expense. Food budgets depended on available income and receipt of WIC and SNAP benefits, which often allowed women more access to fruits and vegetables at the beginning of each month. Since fruits and vegetables tended to run out towards the end of the month, women were more likely to purchase cheaper, less expensive foods, as well as fewer fruits and vegetables throughout the month to stretch their available food benefits. Here, a woman says, "Sometimes I find that I eat better when I first get my food stamps than I do later. Grocery shopping, I can buy my fruits, I can buy my vegetables, but then when it finishes, I won't eat good again until the next month because I can't buy fruits and vegetables fresh all the time." However, there were some women who had plenty of access to fruits and vegetables, and this was primarily due to social support that they received from family and friends. In this quote, the woman describes how she, "I have more than enough access. If I don't have access at home, I have access at my mom's, access at my sister's, everywhere and anywhere I go. I have an uncle who works at a fruit market, so if I don't have access to buy them, he brings lots of fruits home. So there's time when my mom calls me and it's like, okay, there's fruit here." And lastly, seasonal variations limited access to favorite fruits and vegetables, discouraging women from accessing and subsequently eating fruits and vegetables at times. Some women expressed that certain fruits and veggies were not available or were more expensive at particular times of the years, which limits their fruit and veggie options, prevents them from consuming specific fruits and veggies, or requires them to choose an alternate option. In this quote, the participant describes how she can't find watermelon, especially the one that she likes, due to the seasonality. Fruit and veggie preferences were influenced by four factors: taste and smell, freshness, appearance of fruits and vegetables, and cultural preferences for specific fruits and veggies. Taste and smell of fruits and veggies was impacted by cravings, preferences of fruits over vegetables, junk food, and taste transmission. First, cravings influenced what and when fruit and veggies were eaten. Cravings helped as well as hindered participants from consuming more fruits and veggies during pregnancy. Cravings change participants' preferences, at times increasing their fruit and veggie consumption, while at other times decreasing their fruit and veggie consumption. Some had cravings for specific fruit and veggies, while others just wanted fruit and veggies overall. Fruits were preferred more than vegetables. Fruits were juicy, sweet, flavorful, and didn't require a lot of preparation. The taste of veggies deterred more consumption. Not knowing what some veggies tasted like also prevented participants from consuming more vegetables. Junk food and fried food were identified as commonly consumed and preferred foods, especially among participants' children. Children's habitual eating of unhealthier foods created an environment that didn't support fruit and veggie consumption, making it challenging for participants to consume more fruit and veggies during pregnancy. And finally, women were aware that fruit and veggies stimulated their unborn baby's preference for fruit and veggies. They felt that their fruit and veggie consumption transmitted flavors or smells in utero that would influence infant preferences outside the womb. Fresh fruit and veggies were considered those that were uncanned and safe to eat. Spoiled fruits and veggies were avoided as they were considered unsafe. Fruit and veggies were washed to remove pesticides and contamination that could occur from handling. So in this quote, the participant describes the steps that she tries to take to ensure that her fruits and veggies are fresh. She says, first, you have to wash your fruits, especially when you're buying them in open public supermarkets and stuff. You have to wash your fruits. You have to look for those soft patches. You have to study your fruits and vegetables. If they look spoiled, it's not good. Throw it away. The appearance of fruits and veggies was also determined fruit and veggie preferences. Participants were less likely to try weird or unappetizing looking fruits and veggies. Fruits and veggies had to have normal appetizing appearance before being consumed, or else they were not eaten at all, as illustrated by this quote that describes the nastiness of mushrooms because they're considered hairy. And lastly, women are less likely to eat unfamiliar fruits and veggies from different cultures, as illustrated by this quote. Fruit and veggie knowledge was defined as both informational and instrumental knowledge. Women demonstrated informational knowledge about the health benefits of fruits and veggies for the mother and the child. Fruits and veggies were generally regarded as healthy and nutritious due to containing vitamins and minerals. As illustrated by this quote, where the participant explains that fast food is not nutritious, but fruits are due to the vitamins that they have. Some women understood the specific health properties of some of the fruits and veggies, as illustrated by this quote, where she's identifying that oranges contain vitamin C and carrots have vitamin A that are good for the eyes. Instrumental knowledge comprised of hands-on learning about cooking and recipes, as well as technology related to fruits and veggies. Learning about cooking and preparing fruits and veggie recipes occurred primarily through family and friends, but for a few, pregnancy support groups also provided this knowledge. Participants described how they were taught healthy cooking methods and recipes for fruits and veggies, which empowered them. In this case, the woman described it as, well, I'm more confident now that since my boyfriend is the recipe guy, he's telling me that he's giving me ideas to do it myself and not him all the time. And lastly, technology was a resource for acquiring nutrition-related knowledge, especially using web-based tools to support and encourage fruit and veggie intake during pregnancy. Fruit and veggie health outcome expectancies describe participants' beliefs about what will happen as a result of consuming or not consuming fruit and veggies during pregnancy. Women described anticipated health outcomes for themselves, their unborn baby, and both together based on increasing or reducing fruit and veggie intake. Increasing fruit and veggie intake was believed to help control gestational weight gain and gestational diabetes, enhance satiety, and provide overall nutrition. Participants felt that consuming more fruits and vegetables helped to enhance satiety, which meant that it helped to fill them up and make them feel satisfied, and discouraged overeating, subsequently helping them to control gestational weight gain and prevent pregnancy complications, including gestational diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. Eating more fruits and veggies increased participants' energy levels. When participants stopped or reduced fruit and veggie consumption, they described feeling weak, sluggish, and less energized. Lack of fruits and vegetables in their diet also affected their mood, making them feel unmotivated. And finally, women identified maternal fruit and veggie intake as vital to preventing chronic diseases, including diabetes, high cholesterol, and obesity. Women felt poor prenatal fruit and veggie intake caused suboptimal fetal growth and brain development, and subsequently led to poorer birth outcomes, including birth defects, poorer immune system, and smaller infants at birth. Women also understood that fruits and veggies provided nutrients to both the mother and the baby, the developing baby, thus linking maternal and fetal health outcomes during pregnancy. For some, this appeared to be sequential, specifically like the lack of maternal consumption of fruits and veggies led to poorer health for the mother during pregnancy, subsequently affecting infant health. That's illustrated by this quote. I think that if I don't eat fruits and veggies, I would eat more junk food, so maybe I would gain more pounds. So that baby's not going to come out like that healthy. Like my blood sugar, whatever, my pressure is going to be bad maybe. That's what I think if I don't eat fruits. So she is relating gestational weight gain and possible pregnancy complications to infant outcomes. Self-efficacy is the belief in one's ability to complete a task or reach a goal, and it improved when women were already consuming and enjoying fruits and veggies. Enjoyment of fruits and veggies can improve self-efficacy and subsequently increase consumption, as illustrated by one participant who described her love of fruits and veggies and her excitement that more were going to be available in the upcoming months. Self-efficacy also increased when women felt that they could improve health outcomes for themselves and their infants by eating more fruits and veggies, as illustrated by this quote where a participant describes having the ability to return to eating fruits and veggies because of the knowledge that it's healthy for herself and her baby. If you get the habit of eating them, the fruits and veggies, then it's possible to return to eating them, especially if you're aware that you're pregnant and you have a baby inside that needs the best in order to develop well. I think that for the love of that baby, they would start eating them. I think that any mother could start eating fruits and veggies. And lastly, the women felt that they could make, that they were able to make the choice to eat fruits and vegetables. Thus, this influenced their self-efficacy. So having a choice made a woman feel in control of what to eat and what not to eat. According to Schweitzer, intentions comprise a person's motivation towards a goal or target behavior in terms of direction and intensity. Internal and external motivation was shown to influence prenatal fruit and veggie intake. Some women felt that changing fruit and veggie eating behaviors had to be generated internally within themselves, and that outside sources couldn't influence their intention to increase fruit and veggie intake as strongly as their internal motivation. For these women, they changed their mindset, thought positively, and changed attitudes about fruits and veggies to motivate themselves. And this is evident in the quote that's provided. If I'm motivated to eat fruits and veggies, I'm motivated because of myself. That's what I want, not motivated by someone else or anything else. Other women required external motivation from family, friends, coworkers. This quote illustrates this by showing how help from family and friends is needed to help motivate some women. I believe I would need someone to motivate me, like a friend that would tell me to eat more fruits because that's what's best for my baby and for yourself. Fourteen behavioral strategies emerged from the in-depth interviews as methods that women identified to help them improve prenatal fruit and veggie intake. Goal setting was the first, which included planning ahead and establishing routines. Women identified self-monitoring techniques, such as developing a menu or meals, writing shopping lists, documenting consumption patterns. Different methods of experimentation included mixing new fruits and veggies into preferred foods, or varying fruit and veggie preparation methods. Women expressed how they were influenced by their home environment, including seeing others eat junk food and having a lack of fruit and veggies in the home. Making fruits and veggies available and visible in the home were behavioral strategies that helped change the home environment and encourage more fruit and veggie consumption. Increasing the frequency of cooking and eating at home prompted more shared family meals, creating a support system which encouraged more fruit and veggie intake during pregnancy. Eating at home also fostered less consumption of fast food and provided a sense of security in the safety of the foods that were eaten. Women describe purchasing more fruits and veggies in place of junk food, visiting the fruit and veggie aisle first, and budgeting more for fruits and veggie purchases. Due to purchasing more fruits and veggies, participants described consuming them more frequently and in unique ways, such as mixing them with different foods, to ensure that they didn't spoil. Women explained that putting reminders out for themselves or encouraging themselves to eat fruits and veggies, or being self-motivated, would help them to improve their fruit and veggie intake. Women used different methods, such as combining foods, to force themselves to eat unwanted fruits and veggies, knowing the importance of consuming fruits and veggies during pregnancy. Women were aware that they served as role models to their children, prompting them to eat more fruits and veggies. They also observed others modeling optimal fruit and veggie behavior, increasing their motivation to consume more fruits and veggies. Women reduced their junk food intake by purchasing less, having less within the house, or not accepting it if it was offered. Instead, they would make conscious choices to purchase and consume fruits and veggies in place of junk food, knowing it was better for them and their baby. Women expressed a desire to learn different methods to cook healthy, tasty fruits and veggies for themselves and their families. Not having recipes or being concerned about not cooking fruits and veggies well prevented them from experimenting with fruits and veggies. Women felt that they would consume more fruits and veggies if they had better, healthier recipes and if they were given cooking demonstrations. Women recognized that snacking on fruits and veggies or choosing fruits and veggie-based meals increased satiety and decreased consumption of unhealthier options. Fruits were considered more convenient than veggies, as most fruits could be washed and eaten immediately, while most veggies required cooking. Chopping and storing fruits and veggies in advance or purchasing pre-cut fruits and veggies increased consumption. And finally, blending fruits and veggies into smoothies, hiding vegetables in different foods, or preparing foods with fruit and veggie purees were different methods that were used to mask fruit and veggie flavors. Participants often relied on family and friends to implement these methods for them, knowing that the knowledge of the contents of the blends might also stop them from consuming those fruits and veggies. And finally, maternal health status influenced fruit and veggie knowledge. It empowered women to gain more knowledge and to change behavior regarding fruit and veggie intake. Some women modified their fruit and veggie intake during pregnancy to reduce their risk of pregnancy complications. Being at risk of pregnancy complications or knowing women who had pregnancy complications encouraged fruit and vegetable intake. Those who experienced pregnancy complications, including gaining excessive weight during pregnancy, gestational diabetes, or prenatal stress, modified their fruit and veggie intake during pregnancy to improve their health status. For example, women diagnosed with gestational diabetes later during pregnancy limited fruit intake to avoid blood sugar fluctuations, as evidenced by this quote, "I can't eat a lot of fruit because they're sweet, so I kind of stay away a little bit from fruit because my diabetes. And I have to, if I do eat fruit, I have to like mix it with something salty or cheese or something like that." You would be like, "Oh my God, it doesn't match, but I have to do it." So the final conceptual model that emerged from the in-depth qualitative analysis adopts and expands on the HAPA model to include distal factors that were deemed important to improve fruit and vegetable intake among pregnant WIC-eligible Latinas. First, self-efficacy, fruit and vegetable health outcomes expectancies, intentions, action planning, coping planning, linked to reflect the two stages of the HAPA model, the motivational and volition phase. In the motivational phase of the HAPA model, fruit and vegetable health outcome expectancies, which are the health outcomes that women expect for themselves and their babies if they don't eat fruits and vegetables during pregnancy, help a woman to weigh the pros and the cons of consuming more fruits and vegetables during pregnancy. Now, according to the HAPA model, women contemplate their outcome expectancies and then consider whether they have the ability or the perceived self-efficacy to take action, meaning do they have the adherence to eat fruits and vegetables during pregnancy, even with cravings for junk food. Both perceived self-efficacy and fruit and vegetable health outcome expectancies help a pregnant woman to form an intention to adopt the behavior of increasing prenatal fruit and vegetable intake. In the volition phase, the intention to change becomes transformed into action plans, which tell when, where, and how to increase fruit and veggie intake, and coping plans, which means planning how to cope with potential barriers that might hinder one from consuming more fruits and veggies during pregnancy. Adapting and expanding on the HAPA model, fruit and vegetable preferences, fruit and vegetable access, and fruit and vegetable knowledge directly influence a woman's perceived self-efficacy and fruit and vegetable health outcome expectancies. Women that don't like the taste of certain fruits and vegetables are less likely to believe that they have the ability to eat those fruits and vegetables, and this reflects a poor perceived self-efficacy. And those women don't expect to eat more of those fruits and vegetables during pregnancy, reflecting a negative health outcome expectancies. So increasing fruits and vegetable access, as well as knowledge, and changing preferences can increase a woman's belief in her ability to eat more fruits and vegetables during pregnancy and improve her expectation that she will eat more fruits and vegetables during pregnancy. This model posits that the distal factor of social support directly influences fruit and vegetable preferences, access, and knowledge, subsequently influencing self-efficacy and health outcome expectancies, causing intentions to form, action and coping planning strategies to be developed, and generating action to improve prenatal fruit and vegetable intake among Latinas. There are two pre-existing factors, family structure and maternal health status, that influence the conceptual model. Maternal health status influences fruit and vegetable knowledge directly, and family structure influences social support directly. In conclusion, changing prenatal fruit and vegetable intake is a complex, multifactorial process. The adapted HAPA model provides a working framework that serves as a foundation for an intervention designed to encourage fruit and vegetable behavior change among pregnant, WIC-eligible Latinas. Strengthening social support is key in prenatal fruit and vegetable interventions. And family and friends is very, very key social support. Healthcare providers and WIC staff are also key support resources, and they can play an important role in helping pregnant WIC-eligible Latinas through the process of changing fruit and vegetable behavior. The adapted HAPA model has strong application for improving fruit and vegetable behavior. A real-life example of the application of the adapted HAPA model is the Nutrition Education Access Texting, otherwise known as the NEAT study. This study is currently being conducted by our team in Hartford, Connecticut, and it's a one-month randomized controlled trial where participants participate for 1 month, which is designed to increase fruit and veggie intake and purchasing by SNAP participants living in Hartford, Connecticut. The aims of this study are to increase fruit and vegetable access using fruits and vegetable coupons to the Hartford Mobile Market, and this is a picture of the Hartford Mobile Market, which is a year-round market that serves culturally acceptable fruits and vegetables. The second aim is to increase fruit and vegetable preferences through cooking demonstrations, increase fruit and vegetable knowledge through nutrition education, and fruit and vegetable text messaging is also being used, and this is one of the primary intervention pieces that addresses the access, preferences, and knowledge piece of the HAPA model. Preliminary results are showing that the intervention is increasing fruit intake, hasn't shown yet an impact on vegetable intake, but it has shown an impact on spending on fruits and veggies among the intervention group compared to the controls. So this is a real-life application of what we are showing in our adapted HAPA model. And the There are future research needs, randomized controlled trials that enhance social support and use the adapted HAPA model as the foundation for behavior change for prenatal fruit and veggie intervention designs are needed. Now, our findings are consistent with other studies that show that social support is important to promoting healthy dietary habits during pregnancy among Latinas. So therefore, there is a need that social support is included in community-based randomized trials among Latinas. And finally, longitudinal studies testing the long-term maternal and infant effects of a prenatal fruit and veggie intervention are needed. And I would like to thank you all very much for participating and listening. And I just want to leave you with some pictures of our participants that, with their permission, we've been able to use their pictures, and I'd like to share them with you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Amber Romy-Fagler, for a lovely presentation. If there are any questions, just so the listeners are aware, you can actually type them in the question box. So I actually have one question regarding the HAPA framework that you used. I know that there are many different theories and models that are often used in health behavior research, and I was wondering if you could share with us why you decided this framework over some other theories.
We decided to use the HAPA model because of the identification of strategies to be able to bridge the intention with the behavior. Several of the other behavioral models don't describe that bridge that we felt was needed when we were thinking about where we wanted to design an intervention. And so we focused on using the HAPA model so that we could obtain information about not only those, whether the HAPA model itself would be an appropriate model for this population, but also if it was, which we showed it was, what strategies and what planning strategies could we offer to them in an intervention that would help them to move from intentions to behaviors. So we felt this was the best model for us to be able to do that with.
Okay. So we have another question here. So we have Kim Gaines. She's also at UConn, does similar research, and she would love to connect you offline. But one of her questions that she had for you today was, wondering if you plan to use the intervention mapping approach to help design future interventions, and also was wondering your thoughts about how to create an intervention to increase social support.
I'm sorry, could you say the last one?
Sure. So, yeah, she was wondering if you plan to use the intervention mapping approach to help design future interventions, and then as a follow-up, she was also wondering if your thoughts about how to create an intervention to increase social support. So two questions, I guess.
Okay. I have to admit that I'm not as well-versed about the interaction mapping approach, so I would have to say that at this time we're not planning on using that to design an intervention, but in terms of what kind of intervention strategies could be used or intervention strategies could be used to create more social support, we have some very important ideas about including primary key people who women identify as being their primary social support individuals, which could be anywhere from mothers and fathers even to children, in the intervention and being a part of the entire intervention, so that we would not only have the intervention focused towards the mom themselves, but also include that primary support person as well, so that we could continue to enhance social support among that mom, as well as include the intervention for both, so that both are receiving the same messages and they can support each other.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. So we're actually running out of time, but I'm sure if there are any other questions, they can reach out to Dr. Romy Fiedler, and I'm sure she'd be happy to answer them. So I'll let Rachel close out today's session.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, just a reminder, there'll be a short survey when I close out this session, and we appreciate your feedback. Watch for an email from me on Wednesday of this week with a link to the recording, the slides, a link to the video in case that didn't come across clearly, as well as there'll be a link to the CEU certificate that you earned for your attendance today. Journal Club will continue. We'll be back again next Monday, the 31st. We'll be looking at parental nutrition knowledge rather than nutrition label use is associated with adiposity in children. So we hope to see you back next week. Thank you.